The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm Striga. He is Dylan. This is G1 Climax time. Right, Dylan?
Oh, yeah. We are driving this train straight through. We just got out of the station. Still early in the tournament, but man, I am still so excited watching these shows and being here with you. Night three just ended as we were recording it, about probably half an hour ago, and I'm really psyched to do the show right now and continue on this journey of the G1 Climax.
Right. Last time that we, actually the second to last time that we talked about the G1 Climax, we first talked about the undercard matches that I usually watch and you mostly skip, if I understood you correctly. Just want to say about these undercut bouts that we had on these last two shows. We're talking about the second G1 Climax show on July 20 and the one on July 21st that ended, as you just said, a couple of minutes ago. And I want to say that these undercut matches were really, really a lot of fun. For example, on the show on the 20th, we had Zack Sabre Jr. and El Desperado defeating Kota Ibushi and Hirai Kawato in the opening match. And today we had El Desperado and Zack. No, that was yesterday. Wait a sec. Yesterday's show. Today we had Evil and Hiromu Takahashi against Juice Robinson and David Finlay in the opening match.
Yep.
And both of these opening matches are really great tag team matches and were a very good prelude to those eventual singles matches in the G1 Climax. And in both matches, they did something very good as they established kind of secondary finishers. When Zack had Kota Ibushi in this great Manjigatame, for example, on yesterday's show, or today when Evil finished David Finlay with the Banshee Muzzle, they established that move already on the first day of the G1 Climax. And all through these tag team matches and also in some of those singles matches, they started to establish secondary finishers already.
You know, Striga, a lot of people say this about me, but I'm full of surprises, and I watched the entire show today to join you along with it. I watched the undercard matches, and I really enjoyed that Juice and David Finlay versus Hiromu and Evil match.
Yes,
in particular. Cool. I thought that was the best match of the undercard as well. Good, like you said, I really like what they're doing with Evil right now with the Banshee Muzzle, establishing these finishers. I totally agree with your points there, and I would recommend that match to check out. You know, these matches are never bad, really. For the most part, but they're always watchable. You know, you're not going to waste your time watching them. It's just, the only reason why I skip them sometimes is because they kind of feel like they're more just build-up than anything, you know. And around night 10, night 11,
right.
That's what I'm worried about. So I'm trying to pace myself out here and not just go head first into watching every single match. So I'm picking my spots, and I am going to try and follow along the best I can with this.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm going to be away over the weekend, so I won't be able to watch the next two shows live. So I will probably start to be a little bit more picky about those undercut matches as well when I eventually get to watch the shows on demand. But why don't we just jump right into the G1 Climax matches themselves. First one we had yesterday was Juice Robinson in his first appearance in the G1 Climax defeating former winner of the G1 Climax, former IWGP Heavyweight Champion, former Triple Crown Champion, former holder of the Triple Crown and IWGP Heavyweight title simultaneously, Satoshi Kojima, the leader of the Bret Club, was defeated by Juice Robinson with the Pulp Friction, and this was an amazing start for Juice Robinson in the G1 Climax. Those two had an extremely fun match. Juice got a lot of heat from the Kirk and Hall crowd because he He interrupted Kojima's corner spot, but in the end, he won the crowd over with his great performance here, and he got his first win in the G1 Climax. Off to a great start for Juice Robinson.
Couldn't have said it better myself. I was very surprised in a pleasant fashion the result of this match. Juice getting off to a great start and getting a memorable win at the first start of the show. I thought you could make the case this was the best match of night two. I thought overall, we'll talk about it overall in a little bit, but I really loved this match a lot. I think it was a really strong match. I honestly thought it was kind of similar to the match on night one that opened the show with Yoshihashi and Nagata. We saw a very similar thing played out here, and again, the youngster getting the big win. Very happy for Juice. He has to be on cloud nine right now getting this big win. And I got to be honest, I was surprised a little bit, but in the end, no problem at all with this. I really enjoyed it, and surprised in a pleasant fashion. And not only that, as I mentioned, he had a really strong tag team showing the next night, and the sky's the limit for Juice right now. I think he's really going to be impressing some people. If you're not already on the Juice train, and I know he's very popular already, but I think this is going to be a big showing out for him, this G1, and I think he definitely delivered through night one. Really strong match with Kojima.
Yeah, you can see a lot of people in the crowd that are really, really cheering Juice Robinson, and they want him to basically shake hands with him, and they are so excited when he does. And we talked about Juice Robinson a lot on this show. This is an incredible self-made story, and I'm so happy for the guy.
Yeah, and this felt like a big moment, too, this win over Kojima. It did feel like just some ho-hum, you know, deal that he got the win in here. And I was really happy for Juice, too. Just like you said, we were on the train a long time ago, and to see him deliver this way is just awesome.
Exactly, exactly. So, next up, we had Michael Elgin against Tama Tonga. And Tama Tonga won this match in about 14 minutes. Maybe they could have cut 3 to 2 minutes. I don't know, but I still liked the match. I thought Tama Tonga performed very well. We criticized him last year. In his first performances in the G1 Climax weren't necessarily that good. But this time I felt he really showed up from day one, and he had a good match with Michael Elgin. Build around Tama Tonga trying to land the gun stun, and in the end, Tama Tonga was able to counter a top rope brainbuster that Elgin tried.
Top rope Falcon Arrow.
Right, his Falcon Arrow, and he countered the top rope Falcon Arrow into the gun stun, and then got the pinfall over Michael Elgin, also establishing that Tama Tonga is able to hit the gun stun, the former finisher of Carl Anderson, out of any position and score a pinfall with that. And they always go back to the moment last year when he pinned Hiroshi Tanahashi with the gun stun. So Tama Tonga picking up his first 2 points here. Michael Elgin losing on his first night.
Yeah, this was a solid match, I would say. Definitely a step down from the first one, but nothing to say bad, really. It was just a solid little match, like you said, maybe a couple of minutes long. You know, I would say, like, if you were doing the star ratings, again, to bring it up, the first match would be nearing, like, 4 stars, and this is, like, 3 stars. So, solid match, nothing wrong with it at all. And, you know, Tonga getting this big upset over Elgin here, and I think that was really interesting to see that, because I don't think many people have predicted that at all, going into the first night over Tonga to get the win. And I think it was not a bad move, honestly, because, you know, everybody thinks of Tonga as a low man on the totem pole in his block, so giving him this win out of the gate, I really don't have a problem with that at all. It just establishes him more, and there's still a long way to go in this tournament. You know, I know you have high hopes for Elgin right now in terms of points, but I still think there's a long way to go. I don't think this could have if that's still definitely very much at play. In my opinion, this doesn't change anything. I just thought it was a nice surprise win on night one of the block.
Yeah, definitely was a nice surprise win, and from there, we went to the third match from the top as Los Ingobernables de Japón clashed again after they had this tag match on the first day. On the second day here, we had Zanada versus Evil. And, you know, when this match was over, what I wrote on Twitter was Kenny Omega brought this out of Zanada, because in this interview we mentioned that is up on New Japan World, Kenny Omega said that he remembers this great guy from All Japan and Wrestle One, the supposed ace of both companies, And what has happened to him? He's just this stoic guy standing in the corner and basically being the third guy in Los Ingobernables. And here in this match, Zanada, in my opinion, really proved that he is top-tier material. And him and Evil, they had a fantastic match with some great spots in there. And Zanada, in the end, he almost got the win with his skull end, with his body scissors dragon sleeper, but then went up and hit the rounding body press, his version of the moonsault, here establishing another finishing move in about 60 minutes in a great match, I thought.
This was another strong match on the show, and I think the show is going really well up to this point. And I really like what both these guys brought to the table in this match. Like you said, Sonata showing a little bit more. I've always had a problem with him. I'm not as high on him as a lot of other people because, like you said, his stoic nature leads to some very dry performances from him. But I thought he stepped it up a little here, and they really worked well together, you know. And I also think it was smart the way they worked. And it also felt like they have more left in the tank for a future matchup as well. This wasn't, I think the best is yet to come for both these guys, really.
Yeah.
And they still had a really good matchup. It was exactly what it needed to be. It's perfect for what it was. And they still can go back to this at any time, and I think they could have an even better match in the future.
You know,
really good stuff.
Right. With Zanada, I'm also always in a little bit of a conflict with Zanada, with basically not only with Zanada, but just with the way that New Japan portrays these guys. Because
yeah.
Zanada has been there since late 2015 now, and they basically haven't done anything with him.
No.
He's just right now getting a little bit more shine, and I thought they should have done that from day one. But they didn't. They really didn't, and they just had him be established as this Los Ingobernables guy. People really like him, but they didn't really pull the trigger on him, and I don't feel like they are pulling the trigger right now. He's probably gonna have a decent G1, but still, there's things you can say about New Japan really having a slow burn on a lot of guys. Sometimes it's great and it works out in the end, and other times it doesn't, and I'm not sure which way Zanada is gonna go.
Yeah, you know, to be honest, more often than not, from what I've seen, it kind of doesn't. When you look at someone like Goto, Shibata never got to capitalize, unfortunately. It's not really fair to say that because they were coming around with him. But, you know, like you said, to be honest with you, I don't think he was ready last year. Like I said, personality-wise, I thought they had him in a good spot. They gave him a big win over Tanahashi. They kind of squandered it the rest of the G1,
yeah.
Whatever goodwill they had. But they tried with him a little bit. They gave him a little bit, but they weren't ready to go all the way with him, like you said. And I don't know. Like you said, I know a lot of people really love this guy. He's got a very popular. He's very popular amongst female fans as well. I've noticed, and that's a really great thing to have. But I think in the ring he's very talented, very smooth. One of the smoothest workers actually in New Japan, I would
yeah.
say, just when it comes to doing moves.
That's
but
another great point. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, but not when it comes to personality. Like, I think he's still missing that a little bit, and I do think, I've said this many times before, Strig, I know you know where I'm going with this, that this Ingobernables deal isn't perfect for everybody. Like, it's hard to pull off, kind of, unless you're Naito. Naito's the one that pulls it off the best. I wonder what he's going to look like after all this ends. I wonder what we're going to see from him after all this ends, because he's always had a little bit of a charisma problem, and he's starting to turn around, like I said, with this match. I think what I said before was totally true, that this is a big moment for Sonata and Evil. I don't think the points are necessarily going to, you know, translate to anything big. I had them both at 10 points, so I think that's a solid G1
yes.
if they do that. But I think it's more about how he carries himself, what he pulls off in the ring. And I definitely think he has a chance to overtake Evil as the number two guy in Ingobernables. I really think they missed the boat, and this is what I wanted last year. I think Sonata and Evil could be a great tag team, and they've really done nothing with them up to this point as single stars. They give them wins every now and again. Usually, for some reason, they both beat Tanahashi whenever they need a big win. But I think if they had these guys as a tag team and really dedicated themselves for this team for 1 year, I think they could get really over and really have a chance to grow and complement each other well. But overall, I'm not up in arms about how they pushed him specifically yet. I think there is a plan in place for him eventually if he does grow to that level. But as far as it is now, I really like this match, you know, and I think that's enough for me right now. And it's just such a hard roster. It's such a stacked roster. They're really into Okada and Omega right now. They've dominated the scene this year, you know, so I think his time could come. Eventually. I'm not up in arms over that or pushing the panic button.
So you know, premise for establishing a homegrown tag team of like Sanada and Evil or Ishii and Goto we talked about last year would be that the tag team titles is something that Japanese wrestlers went for, which they are not.
What a concept.
Yes. What a novel concept that would be.
Yeah, that would be something.
Right. But that's a whole different story. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Dylan, I feel like the next two matches will really set the tone for this show because when Katsushika Okada versus Toru Yano was over, I was 100% back on the Toru Yano bandwagon because I absolutely loved this match. I did.
You loved it so much you tagged me on Twitter.
Yes.
just to let me know. You couldn't wait to talk about this match here.
Oh, man.
You know, I think this match, my problem with Yano and all of Yano's matches, always, this shtick can only go so far with me after we've seen it so many times in the past. And this one was not exactly to the tone of traditional Yano match. Just went really long
exactly.
For a Yano match, I noted. But I don't know if that's a positive, to be honest with you, but I would say, like, if you watch this as a match, the shenanigans were what they were, and it's almost like Yano matches, you have to watch them under a certain lens. If you watch it as a traditional match, it was not good, but if you watch it for entertainment value, I think there's value to be had from it. I can't deny that. I won't say that I liked it or that it was good by any means, but I'd say there's entertainment value to be had from this match. And Okada, he even won with the red ink. I thought that was a nice touch. But, you know, he played along with Yano here. So there's entertainment value to be had. That's all I'll say about this.
The most entertainment value is that the only two wrestlers that ever tapped out to the red ink are Cody Hall and Toru Yano.
Yeah. Hey, listen, they're establishing a secondary.
Right!
we see it with Okada here. So great booking. On that part there.
You know,
did we really need 10 minutes of this?
Yes, I mean, we did, because this match not only had Okada and Yano in it, but it also had Gedo and Yado in it as seconds for both guys. Gedo, of course, came out with Okada and Yado came out with Yano. And there was this one moment where all four guys were on the outside. Toru Yano was, for whatever reason, he was giving low blows to both Okada and his second, Yado, and then Gedo appeared from behind Yano and gave him a low blow too, which led to me laughing literal tears. That was so great. just a fantastic spot. And in the end, Toru Yano Toru Yano's pinfalls in singles matches, they seem like the most dangerous pinfalls of them all because the guy always kicks out like 2.99. And here, Toru Yano tried the exact same, but in the end, Okada reversed one of his cradle attempts into this red ink and got the win here. So, really fun co-main event here.
Yeah, I really like that idea of that gimmick, of a flash pin specialist.
Yes.
Someone like Yoshinori Ogawa was in Noah in his day, sort of. Which was kind of like that, but without so much craziness, where it was kind of serious. This is just like, it's clearly like a clown show when Yano's in the ring. And I'm not saying, like I said, there's entertainment. It's entertaining in its own way. But I fear when we go 5 or 6 matches in, will you still be on that train? I wonder. That's the big storyline right now with Yano.
Yeah.
Will you like?
Well, he's of course going to have his 3 to 5 minute clown show matches that will just be what they are and nothing more.
Isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't feel like that his matches are going to, most of his matches are going to be that long. I don't know.
No, it'll be fun. There'll probably be one that's 30 seconds.
Yeah.
That you have those every year over somebody that gets really upset. But, you know, you never know with that. And I wish that they'd keep things a little bit more serious for the G1 purposes. I have no problem with Yano on the undercards and doing stuff like that, but I wish title matches and G1 matches would have a little bit more... the referee wouldn't look so stupid in these matches, because it's like, what credibility does this referee have? If you were a new viewer tuning into this, you'd think this referee is terrible.
I told you in our last episode that referees in Japan have no credibility at all.
Not in this company. That's for sure. There's no way you can have credibility after this match. But no. Like I said, it was fun for what it was. I'm not trying to criticize it too much. It was fun for what it was. But I won't say it was a good match.
Okay. Then I would really like to hear your opinion on the main event of the second night of the G1 Climax. First, Kenny Omega defeating Minoru Suzuki 21-24 with the Katayoko no Tenshi.
You know my opinion of this match. Yes, I do. Like, you know that I didn't like this.
I already knew when I watched the match that you didn't like it.
Well, so everybody knows what I'm going to say, if you're any sort of listener to this show. But let's hear your opinion. You kicked this off first, Striga. What did you think of this match, Suzuki and Omega?
Okay.
Sell me on why this was great.
I don't think I will be able to sell you on this match because you have your opinion on this one already. Basically written in stone, but okay.
I'll listen to your argument. If you have a very convincing argument, why was this as good as Suzuki versus AJ Styles?
I didn't say that because you can't compare those two matches because they were completely different from one another, which would be like comparing apples and oranges. Basically, that you can't do that.
Well, that's not me doing that. That's many people.
I don't think that's the right comparison, because AJ Styles versus Minoru Suzuki was a fantastic standalone singles match, while Kenny Omega...
Let me stop you right there. And this was completely different than a fantastic standalone singles match. So yeah, go on.
Yes. That, I was just about to say exactly that. This was not a standalone singles match, but this worked perfectly within the story they set up earlier with Kenny Omega being questioned what he would do about the Suzuki-gun shenanigans, and he always said that if Minoru Suzuki would bring his guys, he would bring the Bullet Club, and that's exactly what happened here. So basically, he told you what would happen in this match, and for the majority of the match, they built up so intensive heat that Kirk and Hall was solidly behind Kenny Omega as the mega babyface in this match, which in this circumstance, in my opinion, worked perfectly, as Kenny Omega then in the end was able to fight back and in the end hit the One Winged Angel. And when in the moment that he hit the One Winged Angel, I thought maybe Minoru Suzuki would come back with another sleeper hold, because it looked like Suzuki was grabbing for Omega's neck, but he wasn't. And still, in the finish of this match, Kenny Omega sold his leg that Minoru Suzuki went over for the majority of the match. And this is one point that we have to talk about with the submissions of Suzuki again, because we already said it on one of our shows that Okada versus Suzuki totally killed any momentum for Minoru Suzuki's leg submissions, because you know that the guy is just not going to tap. That's the one criticism I have about this match. Otherwise, the Suzuki-gun interference after Red Shoes Uno was down, and him being down is really not that often. That happens not that often after the V-trigger that Kenny Omega delivered. Then Suzuki-gun in the form of Desperado, Takamichinoku, and Taichi interfered, but then the cavalry came. First, Chase Owens was laid out by Suzuki-gun, but then Bad Luck Fale was out there. And Bad Luck Fale was just the huge mountain that the Suzuki-gun juniors weren't able to fight. And Bad Luck Fale fought them off, and they were just basically... There was basically an explosion in the ring when Bad Luck Fale finally was able to fight them off. And this interference didn't bug me at all, because it worked perfectly in the storyline frame they had built up for this match. And it led to Kenny Omega being even more a sympathetic babyface, to, in the end, make his comeback and defeat Minoru Suzuki. So that's why I love this match.
Okay. That is all great. But why can't we just have a normal wrestling match in wrestling? I just... I don't understand the need for all of this. In G1, everyone had told me for 3 months that this would not happen. Suzuki-gun, they would cut it down. They always cut it down in G1. That's all I heard for all these months. And what is the first match we have with Suzuki but a bunch of bullcrap here? And not only that, I didn't like the interference. I don't think it added anything to the match, to be honest with you, whatsoever. I thought it took away drastically, in fact. Because I actually kind of liked how they played it off at the beginning. You know, these guys, I like Omega, actually. He had good fire early on. He looked tentative early on, and I like that. I like that he kind of made Suzuki out to be a real shooter, so to speak. Somebody that he's afraid of, and that he knows can hurt him. And I think that was great to see. The interference, I think, totally killed anything for me. And on top of that, I have to say that another problem I have, and this really dawned on me when I was watching this, I had a bit of an epiphany when I was watching this match, because I remember back to our last full show that we did,
mm-hmm.
when we were talking about Dragon Gate, and you mentioned the moves not mattering very much, and then I thought about it, and you talk about that legwork that Suzuki did.
Yes.
How many B-triggers did we see at this match?
I think 3 or 4.
Okay, I'm looking at a review right now. Let me shout out my main man, Larry Zonka, of 411 Mania, because I wanted to see if he counted him and I counted it too. I'm going to read it verbatim, how many times he says this in his interview. Omega looks for the V-trigger, but Suzuki pulls the ref in the way. Omega hits Suzuki with the V-trigger. let's go down a little further now, because it's not move for move. Omega hits a V-trigger and a Snapdragon suplex for 2. Suzuki then transitions to a sleeper, but Omega slams him to the mat for the break. He fights it off and hits a desperation V-trigger. Suzuki cuts him off with a dropkick, but Omega hits 2 more V-triggers for a near fall. Then Omega hits 2 more V-triggers, then the one-winged angel, and picks up the win.
Right.
That was a lot more than 3. This move is completely worthless.
Yes.
And what is the difference between this and Dragon Gate that you criticized in our last match? Because this move means absolutely nothing.
Okay.
There's
okay,
no psychology to it. He ignored all the legwork. The legwork didn't mean anything.
Wait a sec. You can't say that this match didn't have any psychology after what I said.
I didn't say anything. I didn't say that. I said this move means nothing, okay. And he ignored the legwork, which is true.
Yes. That is absolutely true, and is the complete opposite of what we just said about secondary finishers. Kenny Omega basically doesn't have one. He does have the one-winged angel, and he is using this knee strike. He's using that too often, very obviously. Okay, that's a total valid point, of course. But I didn't like it. Yes, I can understand that. I had another thing that dawned on me in this match. The Suzuki-gun shenanigans, they are basically also used to blow little smoke and mirrors up for Minoru Suzuki, because you can clearly see that Suzuki has issues of holding up with the pace that the younger guys do, which...
Who said this?
Yeah, we did that. We said that on the show before. And one moment in the match, you could clearly see that when Kenny Omega was going for the reverse runner and Suzuki didn't have any idea where he was in this moment.
Oh, that was really bad.
Yeah.
I didn't even mention that part. that was really bad. They totally botched that.
Yes.
And it's mostly on Suzuki. I don't blame Omega for that. But, you know, I said it all along that Suzuki is not that guy anymore when it comes to the ring work. We never talked about this match. His match with Yoshihashi was... All of his matches are kind of the same, and they're all underwhelming. And they're not for me at all. I did not enjoy this at all. I can't say it was a good match. Or anything like that. I'm not looking forward to Suzuki in this tournament. I will say the result was interesting, that Omega gets the pin over the Never champion here. I thought that they would be looking to protect Minoru going into this, and I do think that, but I think the result is interesting. I think the result's interesting considering in the last night, all of these guys are going to have to be around and have a lot of points, and now Omega has a direct tiebreaker over Suzuki.
Yeah, you know,
so they're going to have.
I never thought they would protect Minoru Suzuki, so it didn't come as a surprise for me.
We're by the end of this, Suzuki and Elgin will both have like lots of losses, and then somebody else is just going to. We're both going to be wrong, pretty much. But
Yeah, but
I'd be happy to be wrong, by the way. If they don't protect Suzuki, job this guy out, because I think he's one of the worst guys on the roster. And honestly, if you look for a push for push in terms of who affects the card the most, he's literally my least favorite wrestler.
Okay.
Possibly in any promotion.
So you, the listener, I would just suggest pick your poison and let us know what you thought about Kenny Omega versus Minoru Suzuki. You heard our opinions right now, and it's time for you to voice your opinion on this match, because I feel like this is a very controversial match.
Yeah, I think most New Japan fans will enjoy this, because if it's a style, if you don't care about interference or anything like that, I can definitely see you liking it. And, it is what it is.
I care about interference, but to me it made sense in the context of the story they told.
But even with that, it loses credibility. It makes it into a circus, really. It's not even wrestling anymore, kind of, when they do this. It's like stuff that I don't like seeing in my wrestling, and that's all I have to say about that, because I don't like that stuff in my wrestling. There's never going to be a time where I think it adds, and I honestly, even if it plays in a story, I don't think this reasonably added anything to the match whatsoever that couldn't have been accomplished through good actual wrestling. Which is what I would want to see. And I don't know if Suzuki is even capable of that anymore. But, you know, it is what it is on there. And I would never like a match like that. And it scares me to death that we're going to see 10 of these matches with Suzuki going up as well. That fills me with dread.
Okay, Dylan, why don't we then go to two singles matches that you probably liked very much, in Yuji Nagata versus Hiroki Goto and Togi Makabe versus Tomohiro Ishii. I gotta say, I had some buffering issues for Hiroki Goto versus Yuji Nagata, so I wasn't able to see the match in its entirety. But what I saw was another great fiery performance from Yuji Nagata, trying to get the win, but in the end falling short again. And we had Togi Makabe versus Tomohiro Ishii in what I thought was a very similar match to Nagata versus Hiroki Goto, so I don't really have very much to say about these matches. Just two heavyweight matches where both guys in each match were going all out, and in the end Goto and Ishii came out victorious, and Goto now with 4 points and Ishii with 2.
Yeah, I really like Nagata and Goto. Not only did they do that kind of strong style match that Goto especially is known for, they did some good stuff early on, too, that's a little different than you might think. And I always like what Goto does, kind of chain wrestling and mat work. I think he's kind of underrated at that. I think that's something he used to do when he was a junior heavyweight, and boy, he went on an excursion and all that, but he's kind of dropped any sort of technical aspects in recent years.
Yeah.
But still, when he does it really well. And I thought he did it well again here with Nagata. I know a lot of people thought it started out slowly, but I really enjoyed that part of the match, to be honest with you. And the segment, which we kind of naturalized as the match went on, was really good. I think everybody knows that. Nothing to say. It was just a really great match. Beautiful Nagata losing again. Totally destroying. This is what happens when you pick with your heart, Striga, when it comes to the pick-ups. I tried to get Nagata to get good points and everything, but I think we're seeing that dream is all come crashing down. But it was a good match, though. He's going to have some great matches. Both he and Goto have had both two really good starts to the tournament. Goto had points as well as performance. Makabe Ishii, it was solid. You know, definitely a step up from Makabe's match with Fale. And a good little match here. Nothing wrong with it. You know, it's exactly what you would expect. Ishii gets the win, and I was happy to see that. Surprised Makabe's taken back-to-back losses. I thought that he'd be someone that may be a bit of a sleeper to do well, but it was a good match. Nothing more to say about that. Good, solid match. Exactly what you said.
There is still the possibility of Togi Makabe creeping up his way through the rankings. And with Hiroki Goto now being up 2-0, I get kind of the feeling that he might go for a Shelton Benjamin run, where Shelton won his first 4 matches and then ended up losing a lot. I don't know what's going to happen.
Let me take a look at the bracket, how that plays out, because that's definitely possible. Someone's going to do that, because they always have someone doing that. I don't know if it's him, because, again, that wouldn't make sense compared to what they have on the last night to have him do that.
Yeah.
So I think, we'll see how it goes. But let me take a look at how the sheet, on my spreadsheet, see how things work out. So you talk about the next match for a while.
I just looked at it, and I have Goto alive at the last night, too, I believe.
That's just logical.
Yeah, yeah, which is yeah, but
yeah.
So we had two matches that I thought were pretty similar, but both matches were a lot of fun. Nagata and Goto was probably better than Makabe versus Ishii, but still, you can also claim that Nagata versus Ishii, that Ishii versus Makabe was a very good match. But then, Dylan, we went for something completely different. We went for Kota Ibushi versus Zack Sabre Jr., a match they did a prelude for in the opening match of the second night. And here, what I wrote on Twitter was we had the most Zack Sabre versus Kota Ibushi match possible, because basically everything they did in this match was to be expected, but it still was just awesome. Just awesome to be able to see this kind of match between those two guys live, because they never had a singles match against each other, but you could just, with knowing both guys' styles, you knew what to expect, and they completely 100% delivered.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. This was a really great match, actually. Definitely, you know, one of the best matches of the tournament thus far. And I've been really impressed with Zach throughout the first two nights. And I think, like you said, this was what you would imagine, a good clash of styles. The match that we could have gotten in the Cruiserweight Classic, as a lot of people noted on Twitter. But it was a really good match here. You know, and Ibushi getting the win here for Zach. And it's good for him to be on the board now. I think that both guys are really going to have strong tournaments, especially Ibushi after his first match, obviously. And just a great match, like you said. No really thing to say about that. I really like Zach's submission work, as always. And
just in the beginning, when he had this head scissor on it, it seemed like he was just pulling Ibushi's head off his shoulders. That was just amazing.
I wonder if the neck is going to be I wonder if the neck of Ibushi is going to be a recurring story in this tournament.
Yeah.
Because they continue to pull that card out when it comes to his match with Naito, as well as this match with Zach.
Exactly.
I'd love to see that's something that continues on throughout the tournament. It's maybe we can have a little bit of variety in his match styles with different opponents and how they target it. So I'm really looking forward to see how that goes, and it's just both of these guys are really interesting going forward to me.
What definitely has a lot of variety is Kota Ibushi's singles matches, because the match against Tetsuya Naito was full of great high spots, while this one against Zack Sabre Jr. was more about submissions and kicks and strikes. I remember this incredible palm strike that Kota Ibushi hit Zack Sabre with, like, in the middle of the match. And in the end, and also all these great submissions that Zack pulled out to counter off Kota Ibushi's offense. They were great. But in the end, Zack Sabre, he set up set up his own demise, as he went for the cross arm breaker I think he went for the Jim Breaks armbar, and Kota Ibushi was able to power out and pull him up for the last ride powerbomb. So he got the win there. Amazing finish to a fantastic match.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I loved, like you said, Sabre's counters were really well done in this match, whether it be to a submission. There was a point where Ibushi was leaping at him, and he dropped him and got him in a pinning, you know, predicament really quick. And there was times where, say, Ibushi would go for his Pele kick, Sabre would catch him in the ankle lock, go right to the STF, and just really good stuff for both guys. You know, like I said, really enjoyed this match a lot. One of the best of the tournament so far.
Yes, definitely. And also, coming up next here was Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Bad Luck Fale. And Dylan, they did it again.
Yeah! Hey, listen, we are the Fale. This is Fale headquarters right now, this show. Because we
bad
love
luck city,
Bad Luck Fale. Yeah, Bad Luck City. That's what we're all about here on the Eastern Lariat. And like we said, when you put him against guys like Tanahashi, he's going to deliver. And he totally delivered here. And I think it was nice to, never mind the match, which was really good, and I know we were going to get into that a little more, but I just like that they went ahead and pulled the trigger on the finish so early in the tournament for once, instead of doing it on night 17,
right,
like they did 1 year, and countless teases beforehand that never went anywhere. Now we did it to start off the tournament. I think that's good. Maybe this could be Tanahashi's secondary finisher, the countout that they're establishing. He wins all of his matches by countout. I think that would be a great gimmick for somebody like Yano to do as well. I would love that gimmick. But anyway, this was a really strong match. Both guys did what they did. If you've seen their other matches, they didn't rewrite the book, but what you got was really good. It was totally soul food for these guys.
Right.
And nothing to say bad about it at all. It was a really strong performance for both men.
Tanahashi trying to fight off the bad luck fall will never get old.
Yep.
Bad luck Fale being the guy to pound on Tanahashi will never get old either. So, just a fun match, and bad luck Fale is here for the picking. He's here for Tanahashi, for hurting guys like Tanahashi. And yep.
Tanahashi did such a great job when he was fighting on offense,
right,
he still made you believe he was in imminent danger. He sold throughout this match. He had a brilliant performance on both sides of wrestling, whether it be on offense or selling. I thought he did an absolutely great job in this match. And he's really just one of the best in the world right now, injury or not. He is having a really strong tournament in terms of his in-ring performance thus far. I can't wait to see where he goes. And the Fale still will do what Fale does, and that's be really good.
Yes.
For his role.
And finally, main event for Kirken Hall, Yoshihashi versus Tetsuya Naito. Tetsuya Naito.
Yoshihashi in the main event?
Right, and actually coming out second.
Listen, the stars comes out second.
Yeah, right, which was kind of weird. But, you know, this match went...
Why did they do that?
I don't know. I have no idea. This match went 22 minutes. For the first, 10 minutes of the match, I thought it was good, but I didn't necessarily feel the main event of this show really well, but the finishing stretch, which basically were the last 5 minutes and basically the last 10 minutes of this match, really dragged me in and really made me believe that Yoshihashi would be able to outperform Tetsuya Naito and get the win here, like he did last year in Kirken Hall against Kenny Omega. And they did a great job with giving Yoshihashi this shoulder breaker move in order to set up his butterfly lock. That worked perfectly well together. And they had a long submission stretch where Yoshihashi tried the butterfly lock on Naito, but Naito wouldn't give up. And then they also did this karma tease where Naito then in the end was able to hit a desperation destino, which wasn't really a real destino, more like a reverse DDT, sort of. And then in the end, still getting the win with the real destino. So for 22 minutes, very, very good main event.
Oh, I really liked that. I thought both men did a tremendous job yet again. I love the show in general. I think this was a great main event here. You know, like you said, I think that may have been the moment where things started to catch on after the shoulder breaker, because then we started to see him tease karma and look for that. But we saw some great counters to both men's finishers. Not only did we see the match later on, or the move later on, rather, where Naito countered the karma into the modified Destino, but we also had a great moment where he went for Destino early on in the match, or in the middle of the match, so to speak, and Yoshihashi countered with this great F5 type move.
Yes, it was kind of the Japanese commentary wasn't sure how to call that. First of all, they went for DDT, and then they changed up and said Henkei Facebuster, which means modified Facebuster. So I think that's the most accurate explanation of that move.
Yeah, he kind of pulled him over into a spinning Facebuster type.
Yeah.
So it was really cool, though. It's nice to see somebody break out some new moves during the G1, and in a critical spot, too, because I think that's when things really picked up, especially with the crowd. Now, like you said, they went to the butterfly lock. Just a really good match overall, really. They did nothing wrong at all in this match. Like you said, Yoshihashi is reaching that Ishii and Goto level where you know the odds of him winning are very, very long, but he makes you want to believe in him with his performance.
It's almost like the Tomo Akihonma rule.
Right, yeah. He's another one that's just like that. He's kind of portraying that role right now. Not as much of an underdog as he's gotten some big wins thus far, but he's doing a great job with his role. He's not quite... And like you said, he came across by the end of this as a believable main event player in this company. I think the best is yet to come for Yoshihashi if they so choose to have him. I think the crowd, this is somebody the crowd really likes. I think he's just a likable personality in a different way, not in a likable way that he's a larger-than-life star, but there's just something about him. He's got a very strange charisma to him that makes him very likable, and his wrestling is really, really strong, I think. Not necessarily in terms of moves, or he's kind of like the opposite of Sonata in that he's not the smoothest wrestler. He wrestles differently than a lot of
yes.
people on the
roster. Oh yeah,
which I really like.
That was a point I was going to make about Sonata too, because I feel like Sonata sometimes is making it look too easy.
Yeah,
it's too
good point.
Too smoothly. Is that
yeah, yeah. I think
right
that's
word?
A great
yes.
point.
I think that is.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
In comparison to that, Yoshihashi, his wrestling sometimes can be, or his movement can be very weird sometimes. For example,
yeah.
when he goes for his Swanton Bomb, that looks kind of weird. Nobody jumps a Swanton Bomb like Yoshihashi does. But it has a different feeling than the match that Sonata does.
Yeah, and everything about him, really, his posture, the way he runs the ropes,
right.
the way he climbs the rope, everything about him is a little different than everyone would think, and I really like that. I like when wrestlers wrestle differently. That's one of my favorite things in wrestling, really, and I think he does a great job of it.
What I would really like, as we are on the point of secondary finishers again, I would like if Yoshihashi eventually got a win with his powerbomb jackknife combination, because that looks great.
Oh, yeah! Yeah, that is a cool move. I remember seeing that move when I was starting out. That used to be on the SmackDown Here Comes the Pain wrestling game,
exactly.
and I always put that move on my creative wrestling. So I definitely like him bringing that move out. You know, like I said, that is a cool move. He definitely needs to get a win with that. And the point I was going to make on him is that he wrestles in a way that's a lot different than a lot of the traditional main eventers of New Japan, not just in how he wrestles and how he moves, but he wrestles, a lot of people wrestle like they want to have a 5-star match, like Kenny Omega. Yoshihashi wrestles like he wants to overcome the odds and win.
Yes.
And even though he's not that talented. And that's what that's really what connects me to him. He's a perfect underdog character, and I really enjoyed this match with that. And he's had a really strong tournament. He's someone that's going to be, I think, overlooked, unfortunately, by the end of this. But if you look at his match with Nagata and this match with Naito, he's had a really strong tournament this far.
Oh, yeah.
And the door's wide open for MVP race, because there's been a lot of great performances. I think the G1 Night 2 wasn't as great, but Night 1 and 3, A-Block is killing it right now with the first two nights. And I really look forward to the next show, not only for Block A, but Block B as well. I think the best is yet to come for Block B. And I think we're going to be in for a heck of a tournament if things keep going at this pace.
Yeah, well, I enjoyed Block B as well. You didn't enjoy it as much as I did, but still,
I like the first three matches.
Yeah. That's great. That's 3 out of 5. That's very good.
Yeah, good show.
Good show, too. So 3 nights down of the G1 Climax, we enjoyed it very much. There are some great things to pick up from these shows, both just the pure wrestling aspect of it and storyline-wise, which will be picked up later in the G1 Climax, and it's just always fun to go along with those storylines that will eventually turn out to make sense in the end. Just the most fun time of the year if you're a fan of Japanese pro wrestling, or if you're just a general fan of pro wrestling, because this time of the year is always loaded with great wrestling, and there's going to be more shows for the G1 Climax, but this is it from us thus far. I can't really say when we'll be able to be back, because we're recording this on Friday right after the third show, as we mentioned, as I'm going to be on a camping trip over the weekend, so I won't be able to see the shows live. We'll be able to catch up on Monday, so I'll probably be able to do a show early next week, Dylan. How does that sound?
That sounds great. We're going to miss you, Striga.
Ah.
We're going to miss you to camping. And one more point on this first shows I wanted to make is that I remember us doing these shows last year. And this is a bit of the opposite of the effect we saw at the end of last year, or the beginning of last year's tournament, where things started out slow and some people were getting a little antsy. After the
mm-hmm.
first night was great, and we started to see things tone down. But this year, I think this has been an explosive start, not just for the first night, but all the way through the first three nights. And I think it's great to see. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the following nights bring. I can't wait to do the next show.
Yeah, me too. So, as I said, if you would like to get into interaction with us, tell us your opinion on Kenny Omega versus Minoru Suzuki. You can do that if you tweet me at Striga, Striga, or if you tweet Dylan at Dylan0Sky on Twitter. We always appreciate your opinions on there. You can also send us an email, japan@mlw.com. That's japan@mlw.com. And I want to give the final words, as usual, to my co-host Dylan.
Yep. Follow me on Twitter. Talk to me on Twitter. You can say anything positive or negative. I hope you just listen to what I say, though. Even if you disagree with me, that's okay. But, you know, at least give me... I would love to talk to anybody that has the same opinion of Striga, you know, or anything like that, that loved the match and thinks that... anything like that. I love talking to everybody. And if you agree with me, I like that too. But don't worry, I will definitely talk to you. Or if you just want to talk to me about anything, really. It doesn't just have to be wrestling. We're complex men, you and I. I know that for a fact.
Oh, yeah.
So we can talk about any topic intelligently, I hope. And I would love to talk to you guys between now and the next show, early next week. So I can't wait to do the show. I can't wait to see you guys next week.
Yeah. Okay. So this has been the Eastern Lariat for now. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide, this is the MLWRadio.com network.